Hey there, it's Patrick with another Mindfulness Minute here on the Self-Control Podcast. If you're interested in self-control, you're interested in self-development, you're interested in seeing if you can get more, give more out of life, I think mindfulness can be a huge part of that. So I want to talk today about how mindfulness can actually be used to develop beyond our toxic habits. I'm going to give you three tips, three ways in which I believe mindfulness, quite simply, can help us overcome unhealthy, toxic habits. So whether that's gambling, marijuana, pornography, alcohol, overeating, social media addiction, you name it, I'm not claiming to have all the answers for you, but I want to talk specifically about how mindfulness did, over time, help me overcome an addiction to pornography. And so mindfulness, quite simply, as we know, it is that habit or that tendency to be willing to observe how we are thinking and what we are thinking. And if then, through that observation, we need to then exact some conscious control over those thoughts, if those thoughts are not serving us, if these thoughts are driving us into poor emotional state, poor physical state, perhaps through posture, poor breathing. Mindfulness can become a step towards self-control because we are striving to become aware of what is driving our behavior. And what I have found as I've been able to use a little bit of mindfulness is that for me, a lot of unchecked, maybe unconscious thoughts are what are driving me to act the way I do. You know, I use the example when we're driving. It's very easy to let our posture and breathing go when we're driving. We're not paying attention to the road and we wonder why we feel agitated because we're in a sense, we're in two minds, right? We're living somewhere else. We're halfway doing the task at hand and we're not being a good steward, a good caretaker of our own body. But you know, one major hurdle for me on this journey is remembering to be mindful. You know, sometimes I get so far into my day or into my night and I realize, oh, you know, have I taken one conscious breath since I've been out of the house? Did I make eye contact with that person during that conversation? Did I really think about what I was saying or was I being reactionary, you know, reacting to their comments, letting them drive the flow of the conversation the whole time? Was I slumping and slouching? Was I just sort of falling back into those old habits? But there's more to it than that, I think, because Mindfulness has made me aware of my constant desire to be a certain way or this belief that I should be different. So it's not uncommon if you're feeling like you'd want to be more impactful upon your own life. You feel like you could give more, you could get more, right? Now, it's not that we necessarily need to obsess over being better or different. As you know, I've said that. We do know when there's a feeling inside of us that we're not living authentically. A feeling that maybe you're holding back, you're not pursuing, you're not following through, you're somewhat of a passenger in your own life. There's no judgment here. I've been that. I still sometimes am that. It's easy to fall back into mindlessness, into negative thinking, right? Poor me, woe is me, I'm not doing enough, I'm not getting enough, blah, blah. How can we use mindfulness to reignite that inner fire? You know, sometimes at the end of the day, there's that bitter taste that we didn't come through the way we'd like to. You know, that next morning, we feel like we came up short the day before. We aren't proud of the way we performed. You know, we develop this tendency to feel guilty or ashamed of our past behavior. But like I was saying, there is more to it than that. I had to realize in mindfulness, this project of observing my thoughts, I realized through mindfulness that my way of talking to myself was part of the issue. Yes, I could be better, so-called, happier, prouder. Yes, I could look back and say, well, I could have improved my posture in that moment. I could have been breathing better my whole life. I could improve my social skills and be more vocal, more assertive. right there, that is a trap in and of itself. The way we talk to ourselves can be a trap in and of itself when we frame it as a negative, right? When we frame it relationally to say, in the past I was wrong, and now I see how I should be, right? In the future I will be bigger, better, bolder. But right now I'm not that. We put ourselves into a trap. As my friend once told me, you know, this obsession with change creates a binary. And now you're stuck. And if you'd like to maybe hear more about this, you'll know perhaps that I'm doing a whole series of episodes on this idea of binary entrapment. How we talk to ourselves, how we create essentially a framework in which we abuse ourselves. We refuse to see ourselves in the present because we're worried about how we performed in the past. We're worried about some imaginary future or some better future that distracts us from the moment. I definitely encourage you to check out some of the episodes we've released this month about binary entrapment, because you can start to see quite clearly, as I did, how, for instance, addiction and bad habits that we're going to talk about now become fertile ground. Really, they become one of the big ways that we further abuse ourselves. And I go into all that and I try and give you some insight into how I broke free from addiction by understanding the way in which I trapped myself between two points. And mindfulness is a huge part of that because, as I say, I began to see the way in which I was talking to myself was abusive and it was misleading because it took me away from the present moment where I actually have control. So where do we start if we want to live a life that we feel we deserve? What can we do if we believe like the people in our lives don't yet know the real us? What is left for us if we live in this way of self-hate, self-abuse, negativity? We let bad habits be the way in which we distract and medicate ourselves. If we accept that life just is a struggle, it must be a struggle, it has to be a struggle, life has to be hard. If this way of living is normal for us, right, and it was for me for many years, and I still hear that voice inside me sometimes, but how can we rise up to that place where we get to smile? How can we get to that place where we move easily? We're walking on sunshine, so to speak, where we don't have to carry that heaviness in our chest, in our feet, you know, where we could actually stand up and stick out our chest and our chin, and we don't have to live in a way where we're playing small with that fear in our heart. How can we get to this place? Well, I think in a lot of ways, we can only really ask those questions if we've at some point tasted it. Otherwise, we're distracting ourselves with an imaginary future based on the opposite of the pain we feel. But the life that we can live, I believe it has to be glimpsed even briefly, you know, one good day. You know, one, and again, we don't want to get trapped into saying good and bad, but one day where we didn't feel afraid. One day where we believed our life was worth living. Maybe it's a time you can think of when you were taking better care of yourself, you know, for whatever reason. Maybe there was someone in your life that mattered enough to you that you wanted to present well to them. Maybe you had some time off work, so you were spending your time your way with people you love. You traveled somewhere, you felt inspired, you felt the sun on your skin. I think that in a sense, it is hard to envision the life we want without using the language of desire. So that's the first tip I want to give you. Is think about the language of desire, the language that you use to talk to yourself about how you want to be. When we compare ourselves in the now to our imagined future or to our once great past, that is, and it can be, a form of self-abuse. When we say, well, now is wrong, right? Now I'm the bad guy. Now I've lost control. Now I'm not who I want to be. In the future, I'll be that guy. So let's try then, instead of using that language of desire, that language of fantasy, that language of distraction, let's try to use a language that's grounded in our real experience, right? Let's deal in the real. And it's okay to compare yourself to someone you used to be or someone you'd like to be, but let's think about real moments, real memories, perhaps. What can we learn from those days that we were successful? What actionable steps can I take, you know, from that summer where I was really on the ball? I was getting up on time, working out, going for a walk, making time for other people, whatever that looks like. Going to the grocery store regularly, eating properly, not staying up all night, whatever that looks like. I can't tell you not to want to be better. That's the whole point of this show. But when we create for ourselves a fantasy, a sort of horror movie of how today is wrong and I'm bad today and I'm out of control today and I'm not who I was last year. Okay, well, go a little further with that language and start putting some actionable steps. It was this language, this change in how I spoke that was the beginning of my breaking free of my addiction to pornography. You know, I've been reflecting on all the years spent essentially addicted to looking at pornography. And I really feel as though I've come up above it these days. You know, I can think of in the last month a couple of moments where I almost relapsed, right? Where I was weak enough to to open up a incognito window in Google Chrome and God knows what I would have typed in, but two moments where I was strong enough to stop it there. But how did I get there? And you know, the other night, a friend of mine came over, we were making some music. Actually, my dad came over to join in. The drinks were flowing and stayed up quite late. Stayed up until the morning. And I knew that it was coming. I'd planned for it. But I also knew that in that hungover and tired state, I knew that I would, because of the pain and discomfort in my own body, I knew where I would go. I knew I would think about pornography. I knew that I would think about the behavior of self-gratification that so often goes with it. Instead of chastising myself, abusing myself, and saying, oh, you pig, here you go again, you're out of control. Yeah, you're going to do that. You're going to fall back. All this work undone. I anticipated it, right? I said, we are bound to feel this way in that moment, to undertake that behavior. But the first thing I did to prevent the relapse was I changed the language I used. I didn't say used to. I didn't say that I was weak. I just said, what will likely happen to you in the future is that you will feel the need to do this, period. There's no value judgment. You will feel the need to do it. You know, changing our language around our urges, around our desires, around our, you may say, needs, but in this case, I think it's a toxic habit based out of self-medicating, based out of self-soothing. But I took away the value judgment and say, you're likely going to have the thought, have the feeling. And that brings me to step two. You change the way you talk to yourself, and then you set an intention. This is what I have done and what I would share with you. You set that intention. The night before, the day before, I said, this is how it's going to go. Doesn't mean you're a bad guy. Doesn't mean you're an animal. Even though in a sense, maybe we are all animals. But I'm not going to give in to those urges. I don't care how I feel. I don't care if it hurts. I don't care if I need to be distracted or I'm aroused for whatever reason. Let's set an intention now that we know that those moments will come and go. Can we try to set an intention and say, well, this week I'll do it a little less. This week, at least, I want to be mindful of when it comes in, right? What do my thoughts do? Where do they go? What makes up my thoughts when I decide to give in to addiction? And make no mistake about it, this has been a 5-year process for me of getting to the point where I'm strong enough to anticipate and to have the self-discipline to not do these things. So can we say, perhaps you're still developing on these things? Can we say, well, there's a good chance that every day when I get home from work, I want to do this thing. This is how it started for me. One night a week, can I be stern enough and caring enough with myself to say, I don't believe that this habit is helpful. I know you're not going to be able to stop it cold turkey. Can we try one night without it and just see how we feel? Observe what our thoughts do. We've changed the way we're talking to ourselves, and we're being intentional, right? Mindfulness brings intention. We're willing to think about how we think and use that past, present, future vision to our advantage and say, I'm starting to see where this problem begins to arise. Can I anticipate it? I don't have to beat myself up. Yes, I'm going to give in to it some days. How about tomorrow? Can we try tomorrow to set an intention to say, hey, at least think for a minute before you fall into it. What were you thinking? What were you feeling? Bringing that mindfulness is the beginning of the self-control. And as I say, it was a 5-year journey for me to quit pornography. But it started in the early, early weeks of 2019 when I said, man, can I just not do it for one night? And that next morning, I'm out in the world shooting some video with people that I didn't know, and I could just feel that extra boost, right? Not sloppy, not ashamed. Maybe it's all in my head, but that was the beginning. I said, wow, one little moment of mindfulness and intention and self-discipline, I feel that little bit better. And so this brings me then to my third tip, my third way in which mindfulness can benefit us in developing past these toxic habits. It's patience, plain and simple. You know, I can say in hindsight that it was the willingness to try to quit that opened the door to a much larger, much more beneficial, much richer adventure of self-understanding. I at least had to have the patience to say, I'm going to start. What came to be the case was that I relapsed numerous times. But it was this 5-year whittling down. Less and less and less and less. And in that time, pursuing why specifically pornography? Why the self-gratifying behavior that goes along with it? And that why will not come overnight. But, you know, if you're listening to those binary entrapment episodes, you'll know that journaling and scheduling your time, that can be part of it. Talk to yourself about why you do these things. You don't have to beat yourself up about it, but honestly be curious. Look, there's this thing you love to do that on the one hand doesn't seem perhaps to be that healthy. Might be even less healthy than we think. Might really be a problem for our mental health and our energy levels. And yet here I am doing it. Well, okay, why don't I give myself a break? Why don't I just ask myself, what is it that you love about it? And I'll talk more specifically in the next episode about why pornography and why self-gratification. It's very, and I believe this, the thing, whether it's a behavior or a substance that we are addicted to, reveals exactly the issue that needs addressing, exactly the door we should walk through to begin our self-understanding. It's not random. Our vices are not random. We have handpicked them because they do something very, very specific for us. So this pursuit of why, what is it that this does for me? It's not going to come overnight, at least it didn't for me. But it was in the belief that I could stop that opened the door to the understanding of why. And I can now say in hindsight that that's probably how it works and could work for you. You're aware now because you've put a little bit of mind and focus into your life to say, this is something that's not helping. I don't know why I do it. A little bit of self-control to slowly wean off, to slowly whittle it down. Can then open up that time in your life, in your day, in your adventures, in your journey, to look inside and say, why am I doing this? Now, I didn't know that it would take 5 years to fully understand. And so that's what I like to try and condense and offer to you as we wrap it up here. The highs and lows of addiction, of those toxic habits, they fit so perfectly into that mindless trap of desire. We come up to the height of pleasure and satisfaction and fulfillment. We crash down into the low of pain and emptiness and guilt and shame. That's that trap, right? That's that hamster wheel. And just as we feel good in the moment, we can feel equally good by saying, well, I am going to quit one day. And then boom, we crash down. We do it again. We say, I can't. I'm hooked. Right? The supreme pleasure of that fulfillment in the moment is offset by the pain and the crash and the low the next day or the next morning. Just as that supreme moment where we say, I will quit tomorrow, is offset by that pain that we're running from in our past, and we say, I can't be strong enough to do it. And that's where the mindfulness has to come in. That's where that desire to observe yourself and your thoughts over time will begin to open that door toward self-understanding. Not quitting, not being a good guy, not changing, but looking yourself in the face and asking, why do I do this? You know, we tell ourselves, well, I'm wrong, I'm bad, I'll quit tomorrow, or I'll quit next year, or maybe we say, I'll never quit, right? Either way, we're handicapping ourselves with our language. But you can't, or at least I couldn't quit at all tomorrow. I had to journey fully through the problem. I had to take this problem, this vice that I was doing mindlessly, and in a sense, I had to keep doing it mindfully, right? I had to play out this understanding over time through the seasons. Okay, well, I still can't seem to quit. I'm still too addicted to the feeling. I still need to get my dopamine from this. But what does it feel like to try to do it less? What does it feel like to think about why I'm doing it? The change comes, the cracks come in that toxic habit, in that mindlessness, when we let it play out over time, but now we are watching it. We are watching ourselves behave. And we can start to ask some pretty interesting questions from there. So to me, you know, I talk about that bell of abstention, right? That song lyric. Banging your head on the bell of abstention, right? Just saying, I'm going to quit. That does not free you any more than just mindlessly being addicted. Changing our language about what we are going to do and who we are. Setting an intention to at least observe how we think and feel more often than not, and having the patience to let this process of development play out over time, knowing that it won't be perfect, will lead to an understanding to the point where the habit itself isn't even the solution. The habit itself is not even necessary, because the problem now, the way in which I had been so hurt and betrayed by the world, I understood that well enough to know that, well, I don't need to go doing you know what and looking at that stuff. I don't need that anymore. I don't need to lay back in bed and imagine some woman I met. I don't need that anymore. I don't need to have this childish control over my world, this self-medicating, this running from the pain. I know who I am now. Yeah, things have hurt. Yeah, there's been times when I lost my self-control and made excuses about what I could get away with, but I don't need to do these things anymore because I've grown past the problem. It's not, I don't think, growing past the addiction. It's growing past the problem and understanding the problem that you're trying to solve. The addiction is a sort of halfway. It represents to you what needs to be done, but it allows us to open the door to the problem. And the truth is, for me, it wasn't until I put a little bit of determination and a little bit of mindful observation towards myself that I could begin this journey. And I know you can do it too. There's something that you want to develop beyond. That's the language that I would use. I don't want to quit. I don't want to stop. But it's that I want to understand myself well enough to develop past this childish, halfway self-medicating to a more fulfilled place, where I understand myself well enough to know, I know what I'm going to try. I know the kind of tricks I'm up to sort of medicate myself. I don't need them anymore. Or before I know it, if I'm willing to keep going, I won't need them anymore. So I'll leave it there. Remember, if there are bad habits or toxic habits or things in your life you believe don't serve you, try putting a little bit of mindfulness towards them. Observe how you think and feel in those moments. Set an intention to be mindful. Set an intention to say, I know when these things are coming. Let me at least see if I can knock it back 1%, 10%. What would that feel like? What would that look like? What could that do for me? And be patient. A lot of people advocate cold turkey or whatever. Fair enough, but My longest and biggest standing addictions took years. Took years to understand them and then years to fully quit. I think that if you're struggling, consider that. Be willing to be patient. And it will be exponential, meaning the more mindfulness and focus you put in, the more intention you're willing to set, the kinder and more caring you're willing to be with yourself in that patience, the less time it will take overall. So thank you for listening. Please subscribe if this content is useful to you. Get in touch through Facebook, through Instagram. Make sure you're subscribed because I'm going to take a lot of what was spoken about today and put that into our final episode on binary entrapment coming out later this week. We're going to talk about that, how those addictions take up root in our physical body and how mindfulness can be the way in which we root them out, see them for what they are, use our body to free ourselves. Until we speak again, I wish you the best going forward, and we'll talk again in a few days.